Hey, everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, January 6th, 2019. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like the show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 326. I have two guests, two very special guests, comedian J.L. Covan, formerly of the Righteous Prick podcast, now of the Making podcast, Great Again podcast, and my good buddy, Jeff Cerulli, very funny comedian and filmmaker, also my unofficial official co-host of Indie Movie Corner. I'm going to share that conversation with you in a bit. Right now, you can tell that I'm getting over a cold. I have a cold. I'm fighting through it. I'm uploading this episode, trying to get it to you on time. Fighting the cold. Sometimes life just catches up with you when you're busy and running around all over the place. But so it goes. I've been lucky to not really get sick too many times. So it hits us all. We're human. I hope everybody had a safe and happy New Year's celebration. Happy New Year, everybody. Hope everybody has a safe, healthy, and wealth. Well, I wish you wealth in the new year. Yeah. I wish you all the good tidings and blessings for 2019. I hope it's a new year and a new you. I got a last minute show, New Year's Eve show, and in Saratoga Springs, New York, which is about a half an hour north of Albany, the capital region of New York. So it's upstate New York, and I went to work New Year's Eve, and after work, just drove up there. I got a hotel room in like Malta, New York, at some Marriott. I'm trying to build up my Marriott points to see if that really gets me somewhere. I do like Marriott as a chain. They should sponsor this podcast. I do like Marriott. So I was at the Comedy Works, and I hadn't been there since they remodeled. And the last time I was there was maybe almost 3 years ago, when I was opening for Kyle Grooms. And when I was working with Kyle, they also had me at this. So I opened for him. We did one night. How did we do it? It was one night at the Comedy Works, and that was like a Friday night. And then Saturday night, I opened for him again at the Comedy Works. Then I had to drive a half hour to Queensbury, New York, and open for him at this restaurant called Sweet Basil. And that was pretty interesting. And that was almost 3 or 4 years ago. And I had been in the room since at the Comedy Works, and they had remodeled it. They had like a bar area and a dance floor, because I guess they have, like, it's kind of like a nightclub, and then they have a comedy club, like, kind of in the back, and it seats a couple, but maybe 100 or so people. And New Year's Eve shows, like, my last year when I did, the best, probably one of the greatest, coolest shows that I had ever been a part of was, it was the pretty much the best comedy show their New Year's Eve show at. We did a show at Proctor's, and then one at the Capitol Theater, Proctor's Theater in Schenectady, and then the Capitol Theater in Albany. And that's produced by Thomas Attila Lewis and Ethan Ullman. And so I did that show with those two guys, Greg Stone and Joe List. And that was like awesome. That was so incredible. That was an incredible show. And two shows, two really great, fun shows. And that was bringing in 2017. And then last year I did a show at some like lodge, like some ranch place. And the crowd was the show started way too late. And then they just were not feeling me. And I was just, it was just like, I was just a slog through the set. And I tried to, I forgot what town I was in. It's like, it's this town. It's like, well, it doesn't really matter. And they were mad or whatever, but I got through it and I got my check. And then I went back to the travel lodge hotel that they had me in. It isn't a hotel if it's really, it's more like a motel because it was on the ground and it had those, anytime you can access the hotel from the highway, it's just, you know, like access it through those doors. That's more of a motel type. I don't know. But that's what you do when you love comedy. And that's why people were like shitting on Tiffany Haddish for having a bad set. I mean, most comics, most of the veterans, I just was looking at YouTube and David Spade, he was talking about Tiffany Haddish and Louis C.K. He's just like, yeah, it's a New Year's show. They're usually bad and everybody bombs. So it happens. I just didn't like that dude taping Tiffany having a bad night. Oh, I fucking hate that shit. As a comic, like, it makes me so angry, but it's the least respected art form, and stand-up comedy is an art form, and it's not respected unless you're at one of the highest levels. But if you're at my level, when you're a no-name comic and you're just like you just travel and do shows and kill in obscurity, nobody gives a fuck unless you're, you know, super famous. And even then, they kind of don't give a shit to a certain degree. But this show at Saratoga Springs at the Comedy Works, it was fucking fun. I had a good time. I was like talking shit to him. I did bits that I think we talk about it in a little bit in either the Patreon episode or in the one that we're doing now. But the one that's this episode, 326. Just, it was fun. And I had him rolling, and it was a good time. And then I had dinner, which I wasn't expecting. Sometimes, you never know. The chef asked me if I wanted some prime rib and potatoes. And I said, yeah. And then he put it in a styrofoam thing. And I was like, okay. And and so after my set, I just ate it at the bar. And I ate my prime rib out of a styrofoam, prime rib and potatoes out of a styrofoam box. It was good too. It's actually really good. And that's show business. Like, you kill on stage, and then you eat your food at the bar in a styrofoam container, out of a styrofoam container. And that's show business. But it was fun. I had a really good time. Then I went home. I got home right before midnight, and then I just knocked out, just went to sleep. So that was my New Year's. I did not go to the theater this week. If I didn't go to the movies, I wanted to see Escape Room. I will see it eventually. Maybe I'll get to it this week. But I saw a bunch of movies that I liked. I saw this movie that is on Hulu called Skate Kitchen. And it's about these kids that skate in New York. It's like that skateboard, Camille, about these young girls, but it's based on this one girl, Camille. Camille's life is, here we go. Camille's life as a lonely suburban teenager changes dramatically when she befriends a group of girl skateboarders. As she journeys deeper into this raw New York City subculture, she begins to understand the true meaning of friendship. And that was really good. And I figured, since I had seen mid-90s and Minding the Gap, I would complete the trifecta of the three movies that were dealing with skateboarding. And this was really good. So if you have Hulu, you could see it on demand or whatever. It's a really good coming of age story. Jaden Smith's in it too. Yeah, so I saw that. I enjoyed that. And that's about it. I'll just get you to Jeff, and you don't need to be hearing me talk like this with a stuffed up nose and all congested and shit. So I'm just going to get you to Jeff and JL. We had this in the making for quite some time. I would like to revisit this. Maybe we'll do like a halfway mid-year thing or something, but I'd like to get these guys back on the show and shoot the shit about movies again. But this was really fun. I kind of did mine on the fly because the night before, I didn't know we were going to do a top 10. I kind of had the feeling that we might do one, but I had 20 movies that I really liked last year. And then I kind of had to on the spot do it. So you hear me like, oh my God, I don't know. But I think it's pretty accurate from what I liked. Before I cut this on, I started to rewatch A Quiet Place, and I was like, fuck, this movie was really good. And when I had seen it the first time, and I know that Maranzio Vance and I reviewed it on Patreon, and I was like, it was good, but then people just keep at the end of the year now, and now, you know, going into award season, people are saying that this might get considered for awards, and I was like, I gotta watch this again. And I do like the movie, and I've reminded myself by watching it again, saying, wow, this is really fucking good. And I think at the time that I saw it almost a year ago, I was mad about some other stuff. I was just in my head about a lot of stuff that was going on in my personal life. And I was just like angry. Because I don't think I gave it the time that I should have given it. So I'm going to rewatch it again. And it is really good. So without further ado, here's me shooting the shit with Jeff and JL. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the show. This is the end of the year movie review, stuff that we liked. I'm here with my good buddies, JL Covan and Jeff Cerulli. We're going to talk about some of the films that we liked, some of our best of 2018 movies. We're here in JL's studio, the Covan Studios.
The Beats Lab.
The Beats Lab, Cookies Lockdown, looking very pensive.
When she's in the gate, she thinks somebody, like she's waiting for somebody to enter. Uh-huh. So she assumes she's been locked up because like somebody's going to come in.
Okay.
False hope, man. We're all locked up in that cage waiting for someone to call us.
That's true.
Take us to the next level.
So I guess what we'll do is just talk about our favorite movies and we'll just go around. You can talk about like where you have it ranked.
Sure.
I guess we'll start since we started with Jeff on the Patreon. We'll go with JL. Talk about, give us your first movie. Did you do a top 10 or what did you? How did you compile?
Since you started the episode, I just typed in a top 5.
Okay. Are you comfortable with going first?
Oh, sure.
Okay, so what did you like?
Now, this is a dark horse because I know it wasn't very popular, but my number 5 film for the year is Holmes and Watson. No.
I didn't see it because you trashed it so hard.
It was so disappointing and so lazy, and it started as like the first 4 minutes is like him as a kid showing up to like his prep school.
Okay.
Like as a kid, like 9 years old. Hilarious.
All right.
I was actually like, wait, this. I was laughing legitimately for the first like 4 minutes. I laughed one more time hard, mm-hmm. genuinely, the rest of the movie. Every other laugh was me leaning over to my girlfriend going, this is so fucking bad.
Wow.
So I don't know. And I did scan the movies I saw this year. I think I saw a lot more trash because of MoviePass and then A-List. Like I was much more indiscriminate about like, well, I'll see that. I'm on the road or I'm here, whatever. Right. It doesn't cost me anything. But as far as movies that I thought were actually very good.
Let me ask you this though. Oh, did you get rid of MoviePass yet?
Well, I had a 6-month gift membership. Oh, okay. And then never resumed it because A-List came out.
Got you.
But as far as one that popped into my head, and I have it as five, not that it is my fifth, but I really liked Ready Player One. I know it's a very it's a big budget one, but I really liked Ready Player One.
That came and went.
It made money. It was like a hit, but it wasn't like the Black Panther Avengers kind of hit. It made like 200 mil.
That's your five?
I like the thing is I'm like, trying to think of who like what movies I saw this year, and I was scanning. I was MoviePass. I don't have, so I don't have a record of that.
Right.
But and maybe you guys might remind me as you're going through.
It came out March, early spring.
Yeah, right after some other movie that was wildly overrated.
What was that?
I wonder what that would be.
Wakanda Forever.
Oh, God.
I will say Spider-Man Into the Dark has far eclipsed Black
you
mean Panther.
The play?
Oh wait, what's you two worked hard on that, but it wasn't good. The verse, Spider-Verse,
Into the Spider-Verse.
My God, the over like I thought. See, Black Panther was very good. Mm-hmm. There's no denying that.
Did you hear that, everybody? J.L. Covan said Black Panther was very good.
But when you put a B+ next to Black Panther, it's
wait,
like
I thought you gave it an A-.
No.
What did you give it on the Righteous Prick, R.I.P.?
I thought I gave it a B+.
I could have sworn you gave it an A-, but you just talked a lot of shit about it.
Oh, maybe I did.
I think you gave it. I remember an A-.
Well, I watched it again on Netflix because Laura hadn't seen it. And obviously, I was going to keep those dollars away from the box
of
office receipts.
Were.
But it was.
Wait, I got to say this. So this afternoon, Rod posted on Facebook. I don't know if you saw this.
Off Facebook. I got to read my account.
Okay. He said, now that JL's off of Facebook, I have to say that The Dark Knight is really a great movie. I'm gonna try to find this shit. I gotta find it now that I mentioned it.
And I'm going off on tangents here, but I did think Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse
has blown away
Black Panther in terms of overhype, like in terms of people acting like it's some cultural moment.
Well, Spider-Man's a more popular character.
No, but my God, it's one of the most breathtaking animation. I'm like, what are you talking about?
I did like it.
No, of course. But I'm like, am I fucking like, I feel like Mugatu talking about like like Zoolander's like look. He's like, it's just the same look.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm taking. I was like, it's enjoyable. It's an enjoyable animated movie. But what are everybody's like? One of the most breathtaking, the best Spider-Man movie for sure, and one of those breathtaking animated films I've ever seen. And I'm like, okay, you're
okay. Nonsense. Let me read this. This is from Rod from the Black Guy Who Tips. Now, since that cuck J.L. Covan has deleted his Facebook, I gotta say The Dark Knight is one of my favorite comic book films of all time. It's up there with Black Panther to me. Might even be a tie. Heath Ledger's performance deserved an Oscar and was probably the greatest villain portrayal in comic book movie history. Might watch that live again this weekend. Nolan's cinematography and pacing is unrivaled. 108 likes.
68 of those are for trashing me.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
But I will say, like, off the top of my head, after remembering what I've seen and what I remember thinking Ready Player One was my favorite movie of like the first 3 months of the year.
Really?
I'm not one of these people like I love it when people are like the book is better. I'm like I know Ready Player One was like a book.
in the words of Eric Griffin, it was just all right.
But I had no expectations one way or the other. I just remember sitting down and going like,
okay,
this is a lot of fun. I didn't know what I was getting into. Should I just give you like my five that I think of?
Well, we're gonna go to Jeff.
Okay,
we're gonna go to Jeff. What do you have?
Well, can I say my greatest movie achievement this year? That just happened.
Okay.
So sometimes, you know, if you're with someone, you have to alternate what you see. I don't know how you do.
No, I don't. I'm not a beta.
I say I pick probably 80% of the time, but sometimes I'll be like, all right, we'll see. What do you want to see? And whatever. So my girlfriend was harping about seeing Welcome to Marwen. Yeah. And I was like, I came up with this good plan where I was like, hey, man, I'm driving into the city. I'm coming to a show. I got a show. Why don't you, I'll give you a ride to the theater. You just go see it. The timing just unfortunately doesn't work out. And then she went and saw it. And after, she's like, that was a piece of shit. That was terrible. It's like, it was creepy. It was not good.
I didn't even know it was out. I'd seen the trailers, but I didn't know it was out.
Well, I'll give myself credit for when I saw that, I was like, this looks fucking ridiculous. And then it became like the Louis C.K. where everyone just made fun of it. And I was like, mm-hmm. yeah, this always looked ridiculous. And then
the first preview I saw for that, just to be honest, I was like, I think the combination of that had some star power, Robert Zemeckis. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know. I kind of like, the first time I saw the preview, I was like, huh, that looks interesting. The second time I saw it, I thought, that looks corny. And the same preview, the more I saw it, it was the opposite of the A Star Is Born effect. Yeah. Yeah. The more I saw the preview, this is terrible.
What did you say last night on Twitter? You said something like,
I said whoever just forced their budget to put it as a preview for every single movie deserves part of their Oscar, because the first time I saw the preview, I was like, look at, Bradley Cooper's a filmmaker now.
Then, plus, the Chappelle thing throws you off. If you cast Dave Chappelle to go worry about Bradley Cooper, it's weird. The first thing you're like, oh, it's Dave Chappelle. It takes you out of it.
But when I saw a film by Bradley Cooper, I was like, oh, okay, this is the Vanity Project where he now wants to elevate beyond mere actor and be a filmmaker.
Tour.
Right. And then by the 10th time I saw it, I was like, this is pretty goddamn good. And then, the 100th time I saw it, I was singing along with Gaga.
I have a few that I like that didn't make my top 10. Do you want me to say those, or save those, or not say them at all?
Go with maybe your top five. Go with your top five first.
We're just cutting a top five.
Go whatever. What do you want? Go top.
Give a
10.
Chunk. Give us 10 through 6 in a chunk.
Okay, 10 through 6 in a chunk. That's fine, because now we have to play to his level at the top five. So 10, I had Sorry to Bother You, which I liked, I think, more than most people. I thought it was really creative. You did, it was great satire. But I think most people don't like it as much as me. 9, I had Eighth Grade.
Okay.
Which I thought was really good.
Yeah, I
8,
liked it.
I had Hereditary.
Yeah.
7, I had, which I thought was the funniest movie I saw this year. Not a movie like Blockers or Game Night that is straight up going for comedy. I don't know if you guys saw this, a movie called Private Life on Netflix with Paul Giamatti and Catherine Hahn.
I've seen it.
It's so funny.
Really?
I thought it was so funny. It's dark. Did you see it?
No, I've seen it.
I think it's on my list.
It's very subtle, funny, but it's really funny. And then 6, I had a movie called American Animals, which is the director, Bart Layden, who did The Imposter, which is a documentary that I really enjoyed. He did a narrative about these kids in college who were going to steal a painting.
I think I saw The Imposter. I think we discussed this a few years ago.
I recommended it to everyone. Yeah. I was always especially around the time it came out, I was like, if you're going to watch a doc, watch The Imposter, about the kid in Texas who they take in.
Right, right.
Yeah. So he did a narrative that kind of mixes. The interesting thing about the movie is it's got... You don't notice it from the trailer. The trailer is just about these kids in college who they're going to steal expensive artwork. But what he does is he actually mixes in the people who did it, and he interviews them and plays around, even has them sometimes in the scenes. It's really interesting. It's really creative. It worked for me. It kind of went under the radar. I don't think a lot of people...
Sounds familiar.
I didn't see it in anyone's list, but I really thought it was really something kind of different this year. So that was 10 through 6.
8th grade is probably an omission on my part. I feel like that's one that was...
Man, that's your boy,
fantastic.
Too.
But I don't know. It is, but I'd say if I'd done the work to put in a top 10, it would definitely be in the top 10. I don't want to immediately go, bump Ready Player One. I really did enjoy Ready Player One, so I don't want to just do the quick you're gone, Ready Player One. 8th grade, 5.
Just put it 6th.
Yeah, it might be 6th. It might be the 6th. Bo Burnham at 6'6" might be the 6th man. Coming in off the super sub.
That's my 10 through 6.
Manu Ginobili.
You're 10 through 6. Okay, so for mine, I'm going to go with... Shit, now this is fucking hard now.
While you're thinking, I need to make one more addendum because I was just reminded literally sitting here. 2 that would have been in the top 10 for sure, and probably 6 and 7. Because I really liked them both, were 8th grade, though it's in the top 10, I don't know where, and Can You Ever Forgive Me, co-starring Chris Lambert. I totally, I didn't even, because I was just blanking trying to come up, but I start to finish, thought it was an excellent movie.
It was great.
I really did like that.
So,
and all three leads, Melissa McCarthy was great. What's the guy's name? Richard Grant was great. Lambert as the exterminator.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that was a really good movie. I took my parents to see that, and they did well with like stuff that I didn't think, you know, like the homosexuality and all that stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were great.
Because he's so charismatic, that's why.
He's fucking awesome, yeah. He killed it.
But those would definitely, like, I don't think I have to add anything else, but those two would definitely be in the top 10, if not 6 and 7.
I'm going to have to go with Thoroughbreds.
Great.
I love that movie. That was like the first.
Did you see it?
No,
he always laughs because I do when I talk about indie movies.
Yeah, it's great.
Mr. Ready Player
One over here.
You liked
it more than me, and I liked it a lot. You love Thoroughbreds.
I'm here for the people, Chris.
It's like a modern day Heathers. Like they tapped into that dark, like rich white girl, like kind of dark comedy.
Olivia Cooke and Anya Taylor-Joy. Like it's just it came out. It was presented like a play because it was initially a play first. But I just dug it. I just dug the style of it.
And R.I.P.
Anton Yelchin.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great in that too.
Really talented actor.
Oh, Star Trek guy.
Yeah.
just to let the people know who they're talking about. Chekhov in the new Star Trek.
Really great in this film.
Like crazy?
Like fucking fantastic.
It's a great
one. Did we talk about that?
I think we talked about that guy. He's made a few movies like that. I think that was the best one. I forget his name, the director.
Oh, shit.
But Like Crazy, just like, it got it right. Like that kind of like. That kind of romance, and then like when they get it back, it's just gone already.
Yeah, that was
a really good movie. I like that.
I think I talked about that with Tim Hall, People's Critic on Twitter, who is a film critic based out of Seattle. But that was one of those. JL. I like that one. I liked Annihilation.
Yeah,
I know that people had a problem with the last third of.
What did people have a problem with?
The ending.
I liked the ending. I thought it started slow. I thought it took a while to get going, but I liked where it went ultimately. What did they have a problem with? The ending?
I think the ending, or
the dance?
The dance thing.
Oh, that was creative.
Yeah, it was fun. Like, I was excited about it because of Ex Machina, and I think a lot of people were expecting it to be the same type of vibe, but I like that dude. He makes these...
Denis Villeneuve?
No. It's not him.
What's his name?
Shit.
Is it Goddard?
No.
That's it. But then if you do the same thing, it's like an album. Like a successful album, they're like, it's just like the other album. It's like sometimes you can't win. People are too critical.
You guys have mentioned two movies that I would put in my... would have made my top 10 if the endings didn't bother me. Hereditary and Annihilation.
Which I argued with you about.
Garland.
Alex Garland, that's right. The Hereditary ending, I thought it gave it more depth than a regular, I've said this to you, than a regular, like, sinister, like, weird house movie, where I thought it gave it another layer, and I thought it was way more interesting than that. What was your issue with it? You thought it was just too, like, indie? It was too trying to be weird?
It was just like, it was like, I guess I get it, but I just...
I think that Toni Collette performance makes it better than it is.
Oh, sure. I thought, like, the movie I was very much into until I was like, oh, we got naked old people. And then...
Why are you doing that bit? You shouldn't talk about that topic.
It's like...
you want to have the naked old people. It fit. It was like a naked, like, weird old, like, cult with the grandma.
And I was just like, I didn't find it personally satisfying.
It was just,
it's not that you can't do that or it can't be what your angle is. I was just like, it didn't have to be a cliche ending, but it was also like.
I think the trick of that movie, though, is they advertise that girl a lot. She's very featured in the trailer. And then the movie kind of restarts when that scene is incredible where
it's a terrible
she dies.
Sequel to Eighth Grade.
She dies in the car. They kind of reset the movie.
Of course. I thought that was awesome.
And I was like, this is, I like that kind of stuff. It was almost like,
Psycho.
You mentioned Good Time last year. Good Time resets the movie when he thinks he has his brother and it's this random asshole that he picks up in the movie Good Time.
It kind of like when you, The Hangover.
I kind of like when you play around with that. So Hereditary, like kind of like the ending to me was like a Cabin in the Woods feel. Like I felt satisfied after. I was like, this was great.
Which I was wholly not satisfied
with. You didn't like Cabin in the Woods?
No. I mean, I
was all right.
I was into Cabin in the Woods until the ending. Like,
wow.
Some of,
that was the best part.
Maybe
like
I'm
the
more
new
of a.
Hard ending?
Yeah.
That was
maybe
great.
I'm more of a traditionalist when it comes to my film endings, but I feel like the trend now is for these very avant garde, very different endings that aren't even like surprises that they get me. I'm just like surprised because I'm like, huh.
So you
I like a surprise
it.
Ending that makes me go, oh. Not a surprise ending that makes you go, huh.
So you hated No Country for Old Men then?
That was a movie I preferred a different ending, but I somebody had explained to me when they were saying, I think it was like to show, whatever.
He's never going to, he's catching a ghost, chasing a ghost, all that shit.
But the,
Well, yeah, I liked Annihilation a lot. That was
I did
really
too.
Good. I just thought it took a little while to go, but the ending was like, there basically wasn't it like you just don't know if she's back or
her
double
doppelganger,
yeah you
yeah.
don't know it yeah. was yeah it was interesting. What were you gonna say?
It was just I mean it was not the same. Hereditary really threw me off the ending because I was very into the movie. Annihilation I was like all right, like I wasn't I thought Hereditary was better than Annihilation. But the ending of Annihilation, like, so it was starting from a lower point than Hereditary. So Hereditary, I was more disappointed that the ending threw me. Whereas Annihilation, I was like, this is a good movie. And the ending's okay, I guess.
I'm going to go. So what did I do?
You did Thoroughbreds and Annihilation.
Thoroughbreds, Annihilation. I'm going to go with Monsters and Men. Reynaldo Marcus Green directed it. First time.
Oh, okay.
First film. Like, it's like sort of like a, yeah. It's start, to me... John David Washington's best performance, better than Black Klansman.
Even better than Ballers?
Yes. Yeah, it takes place in this borough of Brooklyn. It takes place in Brooklyn, and it's an Eric Garner-style death that happens in this one neighborhood and how it affects certain people. And it's kind of got like a traffic... they weren't he's on the latest episode of Marin as we're recording this on WTF and
boo.
Well, no, it was okay. A great interview and how these certain people are affected by this murder from this cop, the cops killing this black dude from a young Latino man who's got a prison record trying to turn his life around. A cop, young cop, played by John David Washington, and young baseball prospect. Really good. I think the film that got the most press was with this type, in this genre, if you will, of like cops killing a black dude. The Hate U Give was more the like big Hollywood movie. While I thought it was like you had a really terrific performance from Amanda Stenberg, who was the lead of The Hate U Give. Fantastic performance, but it was a little too like Hollywood and it had a nice sheen on it, even though like I felt like that movie was trying to grind a lot of axes. Monsters and Men, dealing with the same subject matter, was more grounded and just a little more of the earth than I would say The Hate U Give was. But it's a really good film, and I think when you see it, you'll be like, it's good. Like, it's just entertaining, satisfying, solid film. So that's 10, 9, 8, and so I got to give you what, 7 and 6?
You have to do 7, 6.
7, 6.
And you mentioned Black Klansman. I think I would have that below Eighth Grade and Can You Ever Forgive Me, but probably just getting into the top 10.
Yeah.
So 7 and 6. So looking at what I've got, I've got to go, which didn't surprise me. I was excited to see it. The Favorite.
Okay.
The Favorite. I don't do period pieces. I'm not a big fan of period
you
pieces.
You too, right?
Yeah.
People make you feel bad about that.
Yeah, I was, but because of the talent, like Olivia Colman, who I just really discovered, maybe if not last year, mid to late 2017, in Broadchurch, which is a series on Netflix, BBC. I don't know if it's BBC, but it's one of those. It's a terrific show about the murder of one kid and how the town, this seaside town, is affected by this murder and all the other shit going on. So Olivia Colman's great. I love Emma Stone, and I love Rachel Weisz. And to see them in this film from the same dude that did The Lobster, Yorgos Lanthimos.
Dogtooth.
really fucking good. Like,
you
I just
like you like Lobster.
I didn't like
I
the
liked
Lobster.
It. I liked
I
it.
I actually didn't. I didn't go with it.
When
I
it
just,
got nominated for the screenplay, I said, oh, that's, in a weird way, that's more meaningful to me. It's like, oh, they've singled out this movie for like a great script.
It was fine.
I loved this movie, Dogtooth, he did.
Yeah.
And it's foreign. It's before he was making movies in America. So I was excited to see Lobster, and I kind of liked the first half a little bit. And then the second half, I was just like, you know, movies sometimes, either you go with it or you don't.
What about
and
the
I
one
just
before?
Didn't, like, I didn't see Sacred Deer.
Okay, Killing of a Sacred
Deer. I didn't
Deer
see that. Because I was
crazy.
I still on the Lobster. I'm like, I just didn't like the Lobster.
I thought it was okay.
Most people like it. I thought it was ridiculous. I didn't like it.
The favorite. Oh, I'm sorry. Well,
keep going.
The favorite, I was going to say, I've been having bad luck with these artistic endings where I don't need something spelled out to me, but I hate, like, the ending. I think it was also Cookie. I think it was she's moving out.
I you think know she's fucked at the end.
I
though.
Think it was. Oh, of course. But I'm just saying. Is what was the point of the ending?
Just that she's, just because she got rid of, you know, Rachel Weisz, like, she's still fucked.
But what was the rabbits?
Just a, that's just some bullshit symbol. I mean, it's just, that's just being art house.
But
that's
I mean,
just
okay.
art house
no,
about
no,
it.
But,
like,
but that's what I'm saying. Like, that's, it was like,
it didn't surprise you,
I didn't
did
need
it?
That. I didn't need that because it just left me going, instead of being able to go like, wow, this ends like kind of on a dark, like a dark,
yeah,
you're a piece of shit, but everybody's everybody's lost something in this,
yeah,
and there's rabbits. Like, that's what, like, that's what, in my yeah. head, I was like, I don't know why I need the rabbits there as the ending. But it was, I thought it was a very good movie, but I do wonder a little bit if Trump, as much as I think he's a piece of shit, if there is a real, and I really don't want to sound like some right-wing dude, because I'm not criticizing it, but I am questioning the, it's a female-driven power struggle, lesbian, like, is it really that great a movie, or is it like good movie, right time?
I just think it's, no, you know what? I'm going to sound like a dick, and I don't care if people take it that way. One of the, JL always kids me for like when we do our Oscar preview and stuff, he'll say he won't do the women category. He doesn't like to do the women, but that's a little more intriguing to me than the male category, because for the most part, a lot of that shit I could do as an actor. Not to be like, I could fucking do, but you know what I mean. I'm like, what intrigues me is what these women are doing on screen. I find it interesting and fascinating. Because I like those women doing that, I like those actors. It's like that sort of thing where I could watch Rachel Weisz read the phone book. You know what I mean?
So I thought she was. I liked her the best in the movie, but I felt like that movie has a lot of momentum for like honoring all of them. Because I was like, is the in my mind, I was like, is the is she the queen?
Yeah.
Is she really the star of the movie? Like, in other words, she's the queen. She ranks highest, but I was like, she's getting the best actress. And I think that's the politicking of like, but if we double up in the supporting with these two who are equals in
it's
terms of their
be
role,
tough.
One of them will probably win.
I don't think any of them will win because they both have Oscars. I mean, so we have to see who's going to get nominated.
Melissa McCarthy's going to get nominated.
Well, Melissa will get nominated for in the Best Actress category. Best Supporting, you maybe get Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz to get noms.
Are they not going to split like the Golden State Warriors MVP votes?
They might, but I would say like that movie was just way more entertaining than I thought it would be. I just ended up, I was like, yeah. I was excited about
especially
this.
The dry wit of the men in the film.
It was fine.
They did do the dude. One of the dudes did provide most of the jokes. I thought.
So was that your number seven?
That was seven, right?
As I know, it doesn't say. It sounds like I'm being a dick, and I am. But he did have a lot of the laugh lines.
Because like I've been watching this shit, and like, and not to sound like, you know, I've had women teachers. I have a mother. I have a female bosses. I don't give a fuck about like, oh, these, you know what I mean? Like, like, is the movie good?
Yeah.
Are you telling me a good story? Is the acting good? I like this. And it's like part of it. It's like what makes me, I like seeing these women do do these things. Yeah. You know, I'm not really like, oh my God, are these people? You know, I don't think Trump had anything to do with that. I will. So at six,
yeah.
Wow, this is tough. I feel like I have to take "Can You Ever Forgive Me" out of the whole thing because I'm in it. But I will just say that both of them will get nominated.
Yeah, they should both get nominated.
I would say I'm going to go with Widows.
Widows.
Supporting actor could be a tough category, though. It's always it's a pretty be deep really category. Widows, throw that in my top 10.
I liked Widows. I liked Widows because I would say, like, the three of the black films of prominence this year, you had movies that were about one thing, but then under the surface, they're about something else that's sort of like you think Widows is just going to be a heist movie, but it's also about corrupt government. It's about race. It's about class. It's about all these like cops, police brutality. Really interesting movie. I dug it. Biased because it's in Chicago, set in Chicago. And I know my current guest, as we are recording right now, James Vincent Meredith is in it, and I think it's just a good, entertaining movie. I really dug it. I liked how like Steve McQueen, who is an art house director, doing something that's kind of a genre film.
Can I just on this topic generally, since it's a movie podcast, I was talking with my girlfriend yesterday about I was like, it's interesting because I actually talked myself out of the point I was making. I was like, nobody ever talks about the diversity in terms of the filmmakers, but the fact that four of the last five directors to win Best Director have been Mexican. And then I thought to myself, I was like, wait a second, but here's sort of the issue. And Steve McQueen, I brought him up when I was talking about this. I said, he's a high-profile director now. He was one of the few black directors to be nominated for Best Director. And I thought to myself, but he's not American. And these four dudes, though minorities in race, not American. And I feel like that speaks to the issue of like, oh, if you go to another market, it's like jazz artists going to France when there was discrimination here. It's like other places will let you rise up, build your rep, build your craft, become somebody of prominence. Then they come to America and then can make like a splashier debut because they've built up their credibility as an artist outside of Hollywood. But within Hollywood, it's like, name the big Latin directors, name the award-nominated black director, like Spike Lee, who's kind of the dean probably, zero nominations. Like, I think this will be his first director nomination.
Did he get nominated for Do the Right Thing,
not for Malcolm X, which was both controversial at the time. It was kind of a, it was almost like a direct fuck you to him, but it was like neither of those. Like, Malcolm X was kind of his way of saying, this is about a white dude starring Robert De Niro in his prime, this is a 10 nomination film.
Yeah.
It was almost like he was daring them to like reject Oscar bait, and they did.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. He has zero nominations, and he would be kind of the John Singleton. I'm forgetting people maybe in between, but then you have Steve McQueen, who didn't win, but he's not even American.
Right.
And I think that speaks to kind of like America will honor anybody of any color of fame and prominence, but like it's still, or at least has been, a hard path to get if you're inside the system and in the country to get to that level. The few people like, you know, DuVernay didn't get nominated for Selma. I mean, well, Barry Jenkins.
I'm going to say.
I'm literally skipping the most recent.
Yeah.
Who didn't win director but did get nominated.
Right.
It won Best Picture.
Yeah.
Which is still a huge deal.
Director.
Damien Chazelle is pretty fucking awesome.
He's great.
He is awesome. I liked. I did like Lala.
Sometimes you're splitting hairs with stuff. It's like, it's just like.
But I'm saying it's. I don't think it can be. I don't think it's splitting hairs when I was making the point of like nobody ever talks about the diversity in terms of like all these Mexican directors, and I was like. But I don't think it's a coincidence that they're not Mexican-American, that they weren't born in L.A.
Of course,
and became filmmakers at USC or something. Now, I think we're finally seeing some of that change, like a Ryan Coogler, who may not get nominated for Black Panther, but will be nominated in his career for sure. Like, his time to be an A-list, he is an A-list director now. But it is weird that you look at, like, you know, John Singleton got Boys in the Hood and then never approached that level of like critical acclaim or prominence.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was just a kind of a sidebar, but since you mentioned Steve McQueen, it reminded me of a conversation I was having yesterday.
Yeah, and then, you know, the Hollywood Foreign Press for the Golden Globes are going to give those guys a better look than we will, even though they're considered to be the precursor to who gets nominated. But then what muddies the waters is just the best actor in the comedy. Like, it's just, yeah, it's not the your clear-cut five that are, you know, getting the nom. So, JL, what is your?
Well, now I'm down to one. I guess Ready Player One was my five.
Was five, okay.
I don't know if it stays there, but I really did like it, so I'm not like ashamed to have it there. I'll just give you my top four in my mind. One is very recency bias, Roma, only because okay. I was about
a lot
to
of brown people in that one, and you liked it.
About to turn it off.
Yeah.
After about 45 minutes, I was mm-hmm. just like, this just feels like art house jerk off. Like, yeah, we love his vision, his eye, and the way. And then from then on, it really felt more like a setup of just like, here's her mundane life, and now here's all the ways that it goes wrong. I said the movie could have been called Mexican Men Are Trash.
yeah.
But I was very moved. I don't know if it's the best picture of the year, but I know that I was very moved by the end of the movie, like that it was a very, that last hour and 15 minutes really was kind of like deep and like touching and mm-hmm. and kind of intense. I made the point of like, there's a scene where she's in a hospital that felt like the Mexican Captain Phillips ending, like the Tom Hanks just convulsing, and like probably the best acting Tom Hanks has ever done is that I mean, it was just, that moment at the end of Captain Phillips is still, to me, like...
And he didn't even get nominated.
A disgrace. But I put Roma there because I... And not because, oh, it's on everybody's list, so I must have it. I just... And it might be recency bias, but I did find it very moving and well-made. And then my top three has not moved for several months.
Okay. Well, let's hear them.
Quiet Place.
Really?
Loved A Quiet Place.
Okay.
Get out of here, Bird Box.
I'm more of a Bird Box guy, personally.
A Quiet Place, I was just like, God, that, I mean, from the great opening, like a really great opening to that movie, and I just thought it was, I love Emily Blunt. I'm a huge Emily Blunt fan. I just thought it was just, it was not, and I'm glad it's at least getting talked about, even if it doesn't get nominations, because it's nice
I
to
think
see,
it's
like,
gonna get it.
What is it going to get nominated for?
They're Impossible Best Picture.
No.
They've got 10.
Maybe I'm just saying, as like a dark horse, like 10.
I don't think it's going to win. No, but
no,
that,
yeah,
but
sure,
even
maybe,
that,
yeah.
I like that just some commercially successful, non traditional, almost, well, Black Panther will be
did
the
any
most.
Of it, did
you know,
any of it bother you, some of like the. If you really like think of the nitty gritty of the movie, like logistically, did any of that bother you, or you didn't care? It was really fun.
Yeah,
as far as going to the movies, really fun experience.
I just remember being like just into it.
Okay,
and I think sometimes a movie, if it can just keep you invested, is its own tribute of like, oh, I wasn't sitting there like. Yeah. Thinking about it, like nothing was too obvious for me to go like, wait a second. And I'm invested in the journey and the story. Number two, A Star Is Born. Really liked it. And I keep joking. I'm going to be posting a lot of Tom Chambers dunking on a black guy memes for the Oscars. Cause if there's like, if he wins best director and it's like, Spike
people are
going to
be fucking
Barry
mad.
Jenkins,
yeah. be
Ryan
mad.
Coogler. And then he just comes up like,
they're
going to
be so mad.
Boops it on him.
Black Twitter is going to be so fucking
Bradley Cooper
mad.
is going to get a lot of Twitter hate. Depending, he's going to be up for best song.
To a lesser degree, it's like when Kobe won an Oscar last year. All these people work so hard, and they're finally nominated, and then he won best short. And it's like, fuck this guy.
Right, but it's A Star Is Born. I think the preview for A Star Is Born is the unsung MVP.
Maybe it's time to let the old ways go.
They invested clearly a lot of money in getting that preview, because that preview, I am not shitting you, I saw that preview
so much
over 10 times in the theater, 10 separate movies. Uncle Drew, not a joke, not a joke. There was, I'm sitting there with my nephew, and I'm
just
like,
ruined his number one movie.
Is this kid gonna be into A Star Is Born? Why are we? What are we? And every other preview was like a black movie, but they were like, prominently feature Dave Chappelle and play the country music. End of story. But I thought the preview just, by the time I saw the movie, I was like, it was different. It's a weird, like the preview has that soaring moment with guys.
That's a good ass fucking move. Like, when we reviewed this on Patreon, it was, it's everything that you, that we're supposed to like about Hollywood. The spectacle, the music, the relationship between the two characters, the chemistry. It was just that first scene. Like, I keep going, I'll go to my deathbed. They were in that, I saw it in Dolby. And that first scene, did you see it?
Nope.
Damn.
I probably won't. I don't know.
I have like I'm in between two polar opposites, Mr. Indie and Mr. Mainstream. But I will say, like, I saw this in Dolby, and just the way that it, the music came in, and he's it's so good. It's so good.
It's no Coyote Ugly.
You know what
no,
it is?
No, Coyote Ugly, it is not.
I don't want to denigrate it by saying this. It's like a because you, this will sound bad. It's, but to me, it's not an insult. It's like an ultimate meal at the Cheesecake Factory. Like, I know this is delivering that's every fine cliche and stuff, but it's so good. It's just the burger was done perfectly. The cheesecake was perfect. It was just like, I know this isn't fine. It's not the fine dining that like often, but it's like
a good movie.
I'm a 10
a
out of 10
movie.
Happy. Nothing stuck out that
are
was
you buying
bad
this on Blu-ray?
Oh, hell yeah. Usually every year, top two to top four get purchased.
Yeah,
this year it's probably just going to be a top two.
You're so right about that. It was advertised so much. Every movie, I would say, became a joke. Like, I wonder if we're going to see the... And I can never remember seeing a preview more than like maybe twice for a movie.
Oh.
And A Star Is Born was like every movie. And me and my girlfriend would make fun of it at first. And then I realized everyone quickly turned and everyone like started to love it. And she didn't get it up until about a month ago. She's still making fun of it. I had to be like, no. Everybody loves
yes
it. You're wrong here now. We can make fun of it, but like at least know that you're like most people love it.
No.
So
the first time I saw it, I rolled my eyes. And
yes,
I said,
it's goofy.
Laura,
Dave Chappelle comes, it takes you out of it. It's
Laura,
weird
for a while. I thought Dave Chappelle
it
was actually.
Me out of it. He
but
was
it
good.
Doesn't it take. Not
no.
Dave
no
Chappelle.
What took me out of it,
about
I thought
Cooper
Dave Chappelle was a strategic choice. He's not in the movie a lot. Mm. He you know, Sam Elliott has like less screen time than
that
Dave Chappelle
yeah
in the preview. I think that was a. Guys.
Of course.
We've black got Dave come Chappelle. We've got. We don't. It's not just. We're not just showing a black. It's Dave Chappelle, guys.
Hey, black people that
super
are going to see Sorry to Bother You.
Okay, this isn't just some sort of token. We got Dave Chappelle to be in our movie.
I was kind of so bummed that
do you not
want to
support
scene
Dave Chappelle?
I was kind of bummed that they showed it. I would have liked to have been surprised.
Surprised?
But it's to me, it was Laura hated that preview almost up until the like week the movie came out.
Did she like it?
Oh, yeah, she loved
damn
it.
Damn.
She was just like, ugh. And I was like, I was the one to turn, not because everybody else was. I think I had seen so many movies. I was like, it's, I know you hate it, but like, this is, when she, oh, come on now. This is awesome. And it's a well-constructed, most people, I think, started rolling their eyes. And then by the time when I saw that movie, I was almost like, my heart, it's embarrassing.
No,
I'm like
dude,
feeling
no,
this
it's
scene
good, dude,
because we've all seen it, but and in the
but when
theater,
you see what's around it,
I was like, oh, you know what? Fuck it. I'm in.
Did you cry?
No, but okay. And I laughed. There was a scene. It's not a spoiler, but there's a scene where he pees himself during the Grammys, which
was
both very sad. But I was also laughing.
Why does he pee himself?
I was sad.
He's like such a drunk.
He's
it's
so
like it's an embarrassing.
Oh, Bradley
scene
Cooper.
You know what's? You know why I didn't buy the whole soundtrack? I thought his guitar riff on Pretty Woman sounded badass, and they didn't put that on the soundtrack.
It'll be in the movie. Well, you know, I was scared. That scared me. I was nervous. I was nervous when he played that, when he was playing. I was like, okay, he got through it.
Oh, yes.
And
but it to me, I was still like, it sounds pretty like.
No, he
killed
it.
Good.
I was like, fuck. He got through it. Then when he pisses himself, it's like, oh, you were almost there, dude.
Like, I knew I shouldn't be laughing. I wasn't just like, why is nobody else laughing? But I couldn't help it because it's that pee that, like, starts to show up on the pants. And you're like,
okay.
She is, she's
great.
Shocked me. Yeah. Because she was in American Horror Story the season I stopped watching, and she won like a Golden Globe, but I think that was because she's like fashion music iconic type person. So they were going to get, I thought she was terrible in American Horror Story. I was like, what is this? And she's really good in this.
So that's your two.
My two.
Well, shit, what's your number one?
My number one probably won't get any love and was a box office disappointment. But speaking of Damien Chazelle, First Man.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
I fucking love, like, I loved First Man. I didn't like it. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was an amazing movie. I thought it was the combination of, and my caveat here is I had just coincidentally read The Right Stuff by Tom Wolfe. Exactly. And because when Tom Wolfe passed away, I've read only a couple of his books, but I loved them, so I bought a couple more. And The Right Stuff I'd never read, though I'd seen the movie many, many years ago. Great book about the first group of astronauts. So Neil Armstrong was in the second group, kind of alluded to at the end of The Right Stuff. The first were just orbit. And I thought the movie captured the idea that these guys were doing something that was literally unprecedented, unbelievably dangerous, and they just did it. They were basically sitting, in that opening. Did you see First Man?
I saw it. Yeah.
He's basically sitting on a fucking rocket. When you see the ship, you're like, that's just a seat in front of basically a fucking missile. That's what he's like going into space and bouncing off the atmosphere. And I thought the family stuff was good. I thought it culminated. And to me, in this day and age, I think it wouldn't register with a lot of people because, and not to sound like an old man, it's not a superhero movie. It's the real deal. This is the real shit. And you see this little ship in fucking space. And you're like, this guy's the first guy to ever do something that 20 people have ever done ever in human history. And when they land on the moon, and I saw it in IMAX because one of the critics I read said they filmed the moon landing in IMAX. It's the only thing that's actually, in the IMAX print. That door opens up. And the moon fills the IMAX screen and he steps down. And I think he's a young guy, the filmmaker, but I think he was literally just about, I want this to have whatever cinema can do to convey how dangerous the lives these guys lived and how amazing and historic in the history of life this moment was, they did. And I just sat there and I was like, and I thought the very ending of the movie with just him in quarantine. And I think the guy is, just like you say, Coogler's 3 for 3. Chazelle for me is a 3 for 3 with Whiplash, La La. And you talk about fucking different.
Yeah.
Flexing different muscles. Here's your intimate indie, mano a mano. Here's your big flashy musical. And here's your intimacy but couched in sci-fi epic kind of scale.
I liked it, but I can't be a judge of it because I fell asleep. And it's not because of the movie.
The first man to fall asleep.
It's not because of the movie. It's just because I was fucking tired.
Sure.
Dude, so I'm going to get it when it comes out.
I loved Whiplash. La La Land is kind of like the way I am with Star Is Born right now. I was like, give me a fucking break. And then I saw it, and I fucking loved it.
So you haven't
seen
it.
It won me over. I didn't see First Man yet. But
no, Star Is Born.
No, I'm probably not going to see
La La Land.
It. But I'm saying really La La Land, I felt the same way as A Star Is Born. I was like, I can't be more out on this. Yeah. I don't like musicals. And then I saw it on a plane, in fairness,
but
I was
trapped.
Trick
about La La Land
but I loved it. It was charming.
No, but the trick to me that I realized while watching it, there's a 40-minute gap with no music.
Yeah.
There's a lot of musical numbers, but there is that they let
it's the same song over and over again. So you're like, I like the song. Yeah. Let's play it again.
But
they
let Gosling and Stone kind of develop without a break-in of music for at least a half hour, I think, off of memory.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of if Swingers was continued, those two, the Heather Graham and John Favreau character. Mm-hmm. That's what that movie reminded me of.
Interesting.
What that relationship could have possibly.
He couldn't have kept her though. She was out of his league. No, he was hosting an open mic. She'd
just
get
an
the
open
card. I don't think that would have worked. Heather Graham and John Favreau.
It didn't work in La La Land.
But first, ma'am. So just to ending, put a button on it.
I'm going to rent it again.
A Star's, and maybe just because A Star Is Born felt a little more like a guilty pleasure, even though it's quality, it had that kind of, Well, I could have an artisanal treat.
I think you're apologizing too much.
No, I'm saying it's still my number two.
Yeah.
But I had no reservations whatsoever throughout First Man. From the moment it started until the end, I was just like, well done, hit me. Like, and space movies for some reason do this. I think because maybe I'm afraid of, I don't like flying and shit like that. So to me, I admire it. It's not even like overcoming a fear. These people don't have that fear. Like, it doesn't exist in them. And Gravity, for me, was the last movie in theater that I was like blown away by the filmmaking of it. And that was an IMAX 3D I saw. That was the last. I was just like, and some people were like, but the script. And I was like, I'm sorry. I was like, not to sound corny.
No,
I was carried away. Like, I was in it. If Sandra Bullock had a line or Clooney had a line that was like weak, I was like, but look at what I'm looking at.
But that's kind of like what I liked about what you said, A Quiet Place, that I liked. It was an experience to see it in the theater. And the same thing with Gravity on a much more grand sense. But Gravity, I kind of forgot about that. Was an amazing movie to see in the theater.
I've never even bought it, and I loved it. Yeah. I'm just like, what the fuck am I going to do with Gravity on my TV?
Yeah.
It doesn't belong there.
Yeah.
It's a movie, like, Avatar is a little different, but like, I respect the filmmakers that make these big, but I like James.
Avatar was just fucking shit, though.
I disagree.
Did you like it?
I enjoyed it. But what I like about James Cameron is, and I remember watching it again at home, and I was like, he's not a great screenwriter. But that's a spectacle. That's a visual spectacle.
Sure.
And I do like that he at least respects the medium. Him and Christopher Nolan. Christopher Nolan refused to do a Batman 3D, even though they wanted it for the extra ticket money. He was like, I don't do 3D. He was like, I like IMAX. I'll do IMAX.
Yeah.
I'm not doing 3D. 3D sucks. But James Cameron was like, he filmed Avatar, like, it was expensive and it was high tech. And he like went after people who made like shitty, like, just upgrade it to like make more money, and he was like, no, you don't do that.
Yeah.
So, sorry. Okay, yeah. So that's it. I sit here on my
top.
Quiet Place bronze, Star is Born silver, First Man first.
So let's get yours, Jay.
Okay, so here's my top five. Number five, If Beale Street Could Talk, fantastic. Mm-hmm. You told me going in, you were like, it's beautiful, and it is. I mean, it's a really heartbreaking story. It's something.
Don't spoil it, though.
I will not spoil it. Something that takes place in the 70s, but it's going on now. This is the same thing, and so it's a really sad story. But
somebody suppressing the right of white men to say the N-word. I'm guessing we've got to fight that fight.
That's 100% what it is. No, but it's just, and it's the best looking movie of the year. The use of, I mean, I don't know if you noticed, Chris, but the use of light in the background.
God, yeah.
I mean, my God, like. Just like there's like there, it's just
better than
such
Aquaman.
Shit. It's
and
a little better than
Jason
Aquaman.
Momoa.
Not much better.
It?
No.
But the light coming in behind on a lot of the shots, like when they're going to buy the apartment, and there's like, it's just a shit situation.
Spoiler.
I won't. That's in the middle. Not gonna spoil anything else.
Now I know they buy an apartment.
And one other thing, I think that I'll say that's not spoiling that. I think it had a heavy influence of Spike Lee. Remember to Do the Right Thing? Those cutout scenes. Now, this is done way more artistically, but one of the things about Do the Right Thing, it was like very raw. He had those cutout scenes of just those close-ups, and it kind of got those pullouts of
he
the
likes
perfume.
Doing that. Yeah.
That's kind of like Jenkins is. Spike. I'm
he
not saying Spike invented that, but I'm saying when I see that, it reminds me of this. Spike loves this move,
it's
too.
It's a little Spike. It's a little Wes Anderson, too.
Yes.
Yeah,
the close-ups like that. I don't like Wes Anderson either. So I did like Isle of Dogs this year, but...
That racist film.
So, those pullouts. It was just, put together. It's a really kind of remarkable film. That was my number five. Four, movie First Reformed, which you said we didn't talk about.
We did not. No, I wanted to. But
all the indie accolades. He should be nominated for actor.
He probably will.
I think
be.
You saw it. You weren't crazy about it, right?
Guess what part bothered me about it?
The levitation.
The ending. I was like, what? And you offered your...
I didn't read anything about it.
Right,
so
you
I
offered
could be
your
way
theory
off.
On it, which is like interesting. But I remember as somebody who like, I'm always about movies, about like faith and like a well-done movie, like talking about that, exploring it. And I was just like, okay, I'm like this. It's a kind of a lonely kind of... And I even liked the kind of the terrorism angle. Like I liked that he was going to go to this extreme. And then the end, I was just like... What happened here? Now, Jeff has a theory on it, which seemed plausible to me.
I mean, I just thought I was like we I saw
spoiler.
You at a party
we'll
recently.
Tell the people there's a spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler on First Reform.
Because only like 90 people saw it.
It's on Amazon Prime.
So when we were talking, when I hadn't seen you in a while, we were talking about it and you didn't like it. I go, you're taking the ending too seriously. This is just kind of like they showed the Drano. It's clear that he drank it. Cedric the Entertainer knocks. He's not there. I'm like, he died. That was just kind of like heaven or his idea of like that he wanted to be with that girl. He already had, you saw that he like was with the other girl before. So he's done that before. That was kind of like what he wanted. And I think he just died. And I think the levitation gets you like used to that weird stuff can happen in this. That's all. I didn't read any reviews or any stuff. That's just kind of what I took from it. I thought it was just a really like interesting film. What were you going to say?
I'm just saying I liked it. I liked that performance. He's been really good in a lot of stuff lately.
Continue. I mean, just pause it. Yeah.
We're back.
Number three, a movie I know you loved. You saw before me. I think most people don't like this movie. Vox Lux.
Yes.
Which I just was enamored with. I was all in. I was excited to see it, and then I saw it, and I fucking loved it.
I think you were the only other person I know that's seen it.
I tried, and then it was it like had its week out. They didn't do a ton of marketing, and then I was like, okay, I skipped it like the first week. I was like, I'm gonna see it. Then immediately it was like, oh, it's just like a 1:10 in the afternoon show, and yeah. And like it's only in like one theater left with like an afternoon show.
My nerdy ass got up at went to 11 o'clock screening. At, was it the Lowe's and
the Lincoln? That's where I saw it, Lincoln Square.
Yeah, on a Saturday morning.
I just was enamored with it, the whole thing. I thought it was like the most interesting thing I saw this year from just like what he was trying to do with it and this kind of like kind of insane and kind of raw film.
Yeah.
That I just like, you're either with it or you're not. You're either going to be annoyed at Natalie Portman's accent and think she's over the top, or you're going to be like, holy shit, this is fucking insane.
I liked how it was put together. I just like the, just aesthetically, just like the structure. You got the narrator, Willem Dafoe being the narrator.
Yeah.
Like the omnipotent, it's omniscient, right?
No, I think you said it right the first time.
Okay, omnipotent narrator. And, I just dug it. I mean, it was just...
I think omniscient is all-knowing and omnipotent is all-powerful.
So...
I feel like
what's the reading thing? Like, is it like first-person omniscient? Like, if I'm the narrator?
That's a good question.
I forget, dude. I don't know. But I liked Willem Dafoe as the narrator. I dug it. I like how it was presented.
As like an artist. You were saying, like, just like as someone who, like, performs or is like an artist, it's interesting to see it as that point of view of, like... As ridiculous as the movie was, the whole thing is plausible that that would happen to her and she would become this person and that, like, I won't spoil anything, but that she would have to answer questions about stuff that happens across the world because they were influenced by her, which is ridiculous.
And people do make, they do make you do that.
And, and there's some tricks in there too. Again, there's some, like, tricks he does with, like, the casting that can, like, throw you off, but I thought that was a smart move to do that. So anyway, I was all in on that. Number two is a documentary. Minding the Gap, fantastic!
It's terrific.
You saw it,
yeah. You told me to watch.
Giving you credit.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. It's Obama liked it. I think it was in his list because
some of his lists look like somebody like I'm like I know you like to read, dude, but like Frederick Douglass's biography came out 2 weeks ago and the shit's 800 pages. You're like, it's on my top 15 books to read in this month. I got it for Christmas and he was already like.
He's
top
a fast
20
reader.
Books.
He probably breezed.
He got a bootleg?
Fast reader.
They probably did give it to him first. Yes.
For the review, of course, to be like, would you read our book?
Would you put in your top 10 on Facebook?
Yeah, that shit.
It's great, man. I mean, you want to talk. All right, first of all, a movie like mid-90s, Jonah Hill, his vanity project. They gave money. No one says no to him. It's not good. Then you see
I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, it's not good.
I didn't want to see it, but
I thought it was okay.
It's fine, but when you see that. And then you see Minding the Gap, his movie's a piece of shit compared to that.
It's kind
of
like...
Mid-90s is fine. Mid-90s is like stylized nostalgia.
Minding the Gap about skateboarding?
On the surface, yes. It's about three friends who skateboard.
In Rockford,
but it's
Illinois.
Really about these kids that come from kind of poor families who have come from abusive homes and kind of their bond together. And even the character Zach, who's like a really flawed character, you kind of see both sides where like he probably did the thing he's accused of. He kind of admits to it. But you still see he's coming from a broken home. Like, he's not he kind of means well. Like, he can figure it out and get mm-hmm. past this. And the other kid, I forget his name, you really Kier. Root for. Yeah, you really root for that kid.
Kier, I think.
And it's a really, really good look. And kudos to the filmmaker who put himself in it, which sometimes can be weird. The filmmaker's interviewing it, but he's also in it, but not a ton, and he's interviewing his stepmom. And it's just like, that was the best doc I saw by far.
I think that
there's some good docs this year. The Great Uncle Strangers was good. Mr. Rogers was good. This I thought was on another level.
This kind of caused a problem for me because, we'll get to it when I get to mine. But yeah, it was really fucking good. It's on Hulu. So if you have Hulu, definitely see it. So what's
my
your
number one is a movie we talked about. It stuck with me. You Were Never Really Here.
Yeah, you really like that one.
That one, I like it probably more than most people. I just thought it was just, I've never really seen a movie like that. It had Taxi Driver elements. It's like if Taken was done by a woman and someone who wants to get into the emotion of the character, what he's been through. And I just would like some of the shots in that, like the scene, again, I won't spoil because you didn't see it in the kitchen.
Which
when he goes home.
Yes,
I've never really seen anything like that done like that, and it just kind of grabbed me. And I just thought there was one thing that bothered me that I didn't love. I thought there was a weird transition in it, kind of when it resets, kind of in the middle. I thought that was a little clumsy.
Which part?
Kind of as a conclusion, and then kind of resets where he's like, no, he's got to do this thing now. And that was a little clumsy of a transition, but other than that,
before he goes back to that, before he goes to the house,
after the house. When they introduce the new guy, and they're like, "Well, this is the guy who's behind it."
Yeah,
and yeah, that was a little clumsy. But other than that, I liked everything about it. She did the director. I think she's Scottish. She did We Need to Talk About Kevin, which was also excellent.
Excellent movie.
So you like
really
that?
Good.
Yeah, that's a really good movie.
Then see this. You'll like
this. I watched a half hour of it and stopped.
Oh, you didn't
I
like
watched it.
It
my
didn't
dad
get the
and
Roma
I watched
respect
that,
of You Were Never Really Here?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was my number one.
It's a short movie. I can retry.
What was bothering you about it?
I just wasn't interested.
Sure. Yeah.
I rewatched it with my dad Christmas Eve.
Okay. It's a great Christmas movie.
Yeah.
Family.
Okay. Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix.
Nope. Okay, sorry. Need to pause. I'm just gonna.
So that's my number one.
Okay.
Congrats to everyone who made the list, and if you didn't, good luck next year. Make better films.
Good luck next year. So I have to do five, right?
Yeah, your top five.
Okay. So, shit. See, this is where.
This is where it gets hard? Because you put them out of order. You just put a list of films.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the ones and I didn't label
them. Well, some of ours might overlap here.
Some of ours, I would say.
Like, real pretentious critics don't make a numbered list. They just go, these are the best.
That's true. I would say Black Klansman. I feel like it was a bit of a return to form for Spike Lee.
Sure.
I dug it. Where you think it's about a lot of different things. I did like it. I felt like Spike Lee was back with it. I liked that he made a crime drama. And he had other people's input in it. He wasn't just doing it himself.
And the ending worked for you?
It was the Spike Lee ending. Oh, you talking about the Charlottesville stuff?
Yes.
I get it.
Yeah.
It could have been a little ham-fisted, but it's just to say, like, this stuff is still going on today. I get it. Some people needed it. at four.
Do you guys want vanilla biscotti? They're pretty tasty, but it's not good podcast food.
No,
I'll demonstrate.
Crunch.
Yeah, it's not.
Do you have crunch berries that I could have?
At number
four.
I got to go with Black Panther.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you over my biscotti.
Black Panther. I got to go with Black Panther because it was good. I liked it. I liked how Coogler did a lot with a big budget superhero movie.
Can I tell you?
I thought it was cool.
Can I make a comment about Black Panther?
Sure you will.
After rewatching it,
you can see holes when you rewatch.
But I take it still for what it is, which is a fun, big, epic comic movie. But I really, as jokey as this sounds, I still really think Andy Serkis did give arguably the best performance in the movie. He is very creepy
That mixtape
and he's got a great,
shit was funny.
And he's got a great voice. He has a great, like, a
he's a great actor.
But that's what I'm saying. I watched it and I was like, everybody's talking up Killmonger because it's the, Michael B. Jordan's
it's
the star.
Showy role. Yeah,
it's and fine. It's a showy role. But after watching the show, I'm like, man, Andy Serkis is like, it's
just gonna
really good.
All of them worked really well as an ensemble. I like that. Now, this is where at three, I got to bump Eighth Grade out.
Okay.
Because I saw Minding the Gap.
Yeah.
Minding the Gap to me is one of the best films of 2018.
Did you know about it before I told you?
I had heard something about it. And you kept talking about it, so I was like, how do I fucking see this?
Yeah.
And so you said it's on Hulu. I was like, okay, I'll watch it. And I started watching it last Friday night, and I was like, okay, this is good. I like this. So I maybe was in a half hour in. And then I woke up like early the next day on Saturday, and I was just like moved because I didn't know. I was like, okay, these guys are just skateboarding. But then it's about something else. And it does touch on something that's a little deeper than what mid-90s did. Obviously, that's real life. I thought mid-90s was okay. I thought it would be a good companion piece to Eighth Grade.
Yeah. I'll go jail there. I hated the ending so much.
It's like, oh, this is the movie that we made. Yeah,
so bad.
I get it.
So bad.
Of which one?
The ending of mid-90s. Huh. So bad.
So I loved Minding the Gap. At two, I'm going to go with Fox Lux. Just for the same reasons.
Fox Lux.
Because it just kind of hit. Like, I was excited to see it. And I just thought that. And it lived up to my expectation.
Yeah, I was the same way. I was excited.
Yeah.
Remember we were talking about it? I was like, I want to see this movie, Fox Lux.
Because I called you after.
That was so good.
Yeah. And I was just like, she delivered. I just loved the way it went out. The visceral, violent moment of the first act.
Yeah.
Do you think. Nah, we'll talk about it off mic. So I dug that. Number two movie. Number one, If Bill Street Could Talk.
Of course.
I've never seen black people look that good on the on film.
Oh, okay.
With the exception of this film. And a white guy shot it, James Laxton.
All right, I'm back on board.
With the exception of, oh my God, this movie called Restless City.
Well, weren't you saying that also Selma was the same, or that you were?
Well, this Bradford Young shot Selma. He shot Restless City, and he shot Arrival.
Okay.
James Laxton shot Moonlight and Bill Street. I think he did Medicine for Melancholy.
You liked it more than Moonlight. I mean, look, it's like, again, what I was saying about splitting hairs, it's like you can have your reasons for liking, but it's like they're both very good films. Like, they're going to hit you in different ways. I, for some reason, yeah, keep, I asked you the question.
Two different movies,
yeah.
But like,
See, Moonlight was more subtle in some ways. Like, Beale Street, she says specific things that are going on about the system and about this and blah, 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 blah. She's saying things where Moonlight was a little more subtle. You have this kid who's repressed.
Yeah.
And then even at the end, they don't even have sex. It's just like, I think they kiss. And it was like, it was subtle. It was like, this is a big deal for him. This is a big deal for this character.
That was a step in the right direction.
He's repressed himself his whole life. He became this huge, like, person who's like this big, tough guy.
Mm-hmm.
But inside, he's like, you know.
He's still that little boy. Yeah. I thought that
he was very gay ripped though. Like, so it was like,
that's the thing.
Once he decides to fully come out, he's gonna be a hit.
Yeah,
in the gay.
They're gonna love that dude.
Yeah,
in Miami,
he's jacked, and he went on to be in a Bird Box. That guy.
Yes, yeah. But as I said, when Moonlight came out, I said, how did he go from looking like teenage Dikembe Mutombo to being built like?
Well, he
a more
says
cut Terry
in the movie,
Crews.
He says, I built myself.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, that dude was like a lanky Mutombo-looking kid.
He's saying
like 16.
Face.
Yeah, it's not the same guy, obviously.
Obviously.
But I would say...
he's like, why didn't he do it like Boyhood?
He was
this
like,
movie should have taken 12 years to make.
He was like 6'3".
Put him on a regimen.
He was like 6'2", 150 in 10th grade, and then he was like 5'10". 220.
That's the difference between Linklater and Jenkins.
What I will say to answer your question, I would say that Beale Street is a little more accessible
because you have people talking. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, people are telling you how they feel about shit, and it's very much, it's more expressive, obviously. And I could see, like, that family scene when the two families meet up with each other in the living room. Like, that's funny, sad, a little heartbreaking. Brian Tyree Henry's monologue is fucking incredible.
Yeah, he comes in and
alternate universe me.
Is Regina King going to get
nominated? And she might win.
What about the other ones? The the main actors, the two?
No.
You don't think so?
No. They're great, but they're not
You know what's distracting, though?
What?
If you want to talk about casting, and I didn't know that Diego Luna's in it, and I will say, the only thing I'll say negative about the movie, points off for casting Dave Franco. You get points off there when you cast Dave Franco, and you want it to be a serious movie, and you cast fucking Dave Franco? He was fine there. He's in the movie for 2 minutes.
Was James, like, maybe part of the executive producing team?
It's just all connected, man.
But I dug it. I was just so good. I didn't know. I was going into it excited because I like Barry Jenkins, I'm a Barry Jenkins fan since Medicine for Melancholy. The first time I worked with Wyatt Cenac, that's what I talked to him about. Mm-hmm. I was like, Medicine for Melancholy, and now people are kind of jumping on board. So I'm like JL in that regard
when it comes to being a hipster. Right? You don't think so?
I think it's too black.
I think that'll require.
You don't think it's going to get nominated?
I think it'll get nominated.
It seems to have a
for
lot
best
of.
For Best Picture?
Why did Moonlight win?
But they can nominate 10. Yeah.
He's the guy who did.
I don't think he's going to win anything. Let's put it that way.
No, he might not.
No, I'm talking about just
nominated.
Regina King has a strong chance of being nominated.
I think Regina King will win an Oscar this year. She's going to be the black person that wins.
They're not going to, but it's like black. I would laugh if it was like they only nominated Black Panther. It would be such a here you go.
Here you fucking go. But I think I just really fucking love that movie. It hit me, like, I was like, fuck. Like, Jesus. Like, aesthetically, it looks so great.
Did anybody go to the moon on Beale Street by any chance?
Yeah, there was one scene in IMAX.
She goes to Puerto Rico.
Yeah, the Puerto Rico when she steps off the plane in Puerto Rico to IMAX.
Shit, it's hard enough living on Earth than going up, you know. But, yeah, it was a good movie. So I guess that's it. That's a pretty good. I think that was good, you guys.
No Latin representation I see on
Diego Luna.
Diego Luna's in it.
Who I will say? Can I? I know this was on the Patreon, but I forgot.
Do you have any main? Oh,
Narcos Mexico.
Okay,
they better, like, I usually make jokes like this, but I'm really starting to be pissed that, like, when a white dude deals drugs, many Emmys. Ozark got a bunch of nominations.
Breaking Bad.
The Wire, no Emmys. Narcos, no Emmy nominations. And Wire only had like two writing nominations in 5 years. But it is funny. You start to just go, it's not a secret anymore, like about Netflix shows and stuff. You're just like, but Ozark, they're like,
I got a tag or a bit about The Wire that I got that's like 15 years too old. But no, it's not that old. I'll talk about it after.
Okay.
Anything else, do you have like maybe a couple that maybe like honorable mention?
Oh wait, number one is the Us trailer. That's my number one.
Oh, for this things you're excited about?
The best movie of the year was the Us trailer. No, everyone freaked out, but it looks fucking awesome.
It looks like it's gonna be fun.
It looks awesome.
What I don't like is people trying to dissect the motherfucker.
Yeah,
like, shut the fuck up and you'll wait till you see the movie. And there's people that saying like, oh, now somebody said they didn't like. We talked about this when 12 Years a Slave came out. Lupita Nyong'o, how I think she's fucking beautiful. But you know how everybody was like trying to parade, like, oh my God.
My God.
God, she is. You know, now a black woman I saw, I never really liked her. Really? Because like now people were saying, oh, this is so cool. This is a dark skinned cast. And like, it's really interesting that they're doing it this way and blah, blah, blah. I never liked her.
I never liked Lupita.
But can I tell you, this
I don't
is
think she's good.
Along the way, like I spoke about how for like 2 years after she won an Oscar, I said, everybody's talking that we love her. Where the fuck are her roles? She played a flight attendant on a bad Liam Neeson movie. I was like, that's a bad follow-up to an Oscar. That's a bad look as your follow-up.
Yeah.
And then she was getting nothing. And it does speak to the fact that
Star Wars, she played a fucking voice. A voice. Puppet. Yeah.
And I was like, it does speak to the fact that like, but then Black Panther, black director, Us, black director. Like, I'm saying it's a good thing. It's like, oh, if she was leaving it up to maybe traditional Hollywood, she might not be moving along in her career. Her breakout is Steve McQueen, black director.
What's the Queen of Katwe? I have not seen it yet.
Yeah, that was
you called it Africa Chess. I thought you liked it.
It was boring. I'm being totally honest. I'm all for like. It was just. It wasn't bad.
I thought you told me to see it.
I definitely. I've recommended that movie to no one. It was bad. It was boring. No, the one I liked was David Oyelowo with the Rosamund Pike. That was really good.
That was good. It was.
What's that?
Love. Fuck.
Where he's like a king in Africa.
Is she
going to
get nominated for Private War?
Yes.
She'll get nominated.
I haven't
right?
seen it.
That was like her
will.
Oscar bait, that movie. Did you see it?
Yeah.
It didn't stay in the theater long enough.
It was fine.
Enough.
But that's like, it was kind of a messy film. Like, it wasn't great, but it was good. But that's like Oscar bait. Why you're taking that role?
Would you tell me?
A country divided or a kingdom divided?
Oh, a kingdom.
Kingdom united.
A united kingdom or some shit. I'll find it.
I really.
David Oyelowo was good in Gringo.
I didn't see that. Yeah. You
really
love that.
Funny. Just a funny.
I didn't see it. It kind of was like here and gone real quick.
Yeah, it was like a United Kingdom. That's it. Yeah.
Is there anything you really hated this year? That you
Aquaman
really just,
wasn't good.
Ugh. But that's
the only reason I went to go see it was because it was playing. I wanted to go to an AMC Prime theater, so I drove out like a half an hour, 30 miles out to Wayne, New Jersey.
Oof.
And saw it's like it like the seats just kind of vibrate and it's like
Quest for really Aquaman. Good.
I'd like to give out an award that I would give out on my podcast or blog, but since one of those doesn't exist and the other I'm not writing movies, the James Franco, the award for the James Franco in the Interview underrated comedy performance of the year, Ike Barinholtz, yeah. Blockers.
Yeah, Blockers was funny.
Blockers was funny, and I thought Ike Barinholtz, if I'm Dane Cook or Dane Cook's agent, all I see is, that's what I should have done when I broke into movies. Like, I should have gone for that kind of a scene-stealing, but like some heart. Like, it was a really good... Blockers was shocking to me how, like, kind of, I don't want to say flawless, but how strong both the comedy and the movie were for what it was.
Funnier than Spy?
Than Spy?
I haven't seen
Spy.
It.
I love Spy.
I haven't seen anything funnier than that.
I was thinking of Heat or The Heat, which I did not like. Spy was great.
I'm trying to think of anything that I've seen funnier than that movie. Well, Spy was like 2014, 2015.
Well, you're talking about with Cook, they tried to market him as like a heartthrob. Like they put him in like the rom-coms with like Jessica Alba. Like Ike Barinholtz.
And they put him in too many shitty movies like early. They were just like, five movies. Just do five movies.
Employee of the Month.
Suck.
But Blockers, he was very good in that. Movie was fine. It was funny.
I had to see it again. I thought it was fine. Yeah. A lot of people like Game Night. Game Night
Blockers
was
funnier. Game Night I didn't really think was that
Game
great.
Game Night actually disappointed me because it had such a stud cast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Though Plemons, who fucking married to those Kirsten Dunst titties, looking like a shellfish allergy Matt Damon. He was funny in that as like the weird creepy dude.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah, I liked it.
Game Night was a little of it was too much like, oh, you think it's over? Now here's this. And it's like
they
kind of
did that
cast
on purpose.
The cast was good. I thought McAdams was good and Bateman. They're always very good, but it just it wasn't that funny. It was fine. Blockers was funnier.
Blockers was and I really think like I don't know if I've told you this, but I discussed it with you. Dan Enfield.
Yes.
To me is John Cena without like all the muscles.
Yeah.
Like a very just that loud like big energy.
He doesn't
like,
know how funny he is, that dude.
Yeah. Hey, here you go.
But he like I told him he should have we with all his status, I said, you need a podcast called like Cold Takes.
Yeah.
And you just talk about shit you like from like 8 years ago.
Because you know that movie Goonies?
Yeah.
That shit was funny, man. No,
I remember
it was a good
when
movie.
He was like, Jesus Christ, Tony Parker or something. It was like some in like 2016. He's like, Jesus Christ, Tony Parker is good.
Sports takes are the worst. One time he put up Wild Card Weekend. He put up his four winners and all four happened to lose. And I screenshot it and I was like, the Danimal's never wrong. And like his sports takes are always the worst. But yeah, he's very John Cena in that movie Blockers.
Yeah, if you
same
you
mannerisms.
Yeah.
Did he not remind you of Enfield?
He really reminded me of that move.
Sam.
Okay. Like, when he's doing the, you know, they're like, see you later. It's
what
okay.
Would you want to do that? Yeah. I'm saying he would butt chug if he was trying to save his daughter.
His daughter.
But Barinholtz, man, I remember just watching that
did
movie.
Did you see The Oath?
I did not.
I didn't see The Oath.
That just
came
out on demand. Yeah. It's I'll Redbox it. I'll catch up.
But that Blockers is like the only movie that comes to mind where I'm like, I know this isn't any kind of nomination, but it was like a very, very pleasant surprise.
I thought The Oath looked funny. It it wasn't around very long. Oh, also another big comedy that was fine, Tag.
Tag was it had a little heart to it. It was fine.
Tag was fine.
Was Blockers the best comedy of the year?
I liked Simple the Private Life that I
but
said.
You said that was a funny, but
that was
intentionally
like
a comedy.
It was like that's a funnier like Bombback. Like Bombback, it was a very Bombback movie.
Okay.
Oh, then
but
you literally just got
you don't like Noah Bombback?
No,
you didn't
doesn't.
Like While We're Young. You didn't like Mistress America.
You didn't like Squid and the Whale.
Did not that was
now,
the first
Squid
one.
The
I
Whale
saw.
Was funny.
I didn't like the Squid and the Whale at all.
But it's that kind of humor. But there were so many things in it that I just thought were funny.
Ben Stiller and Dustin Hoffman were in one, right?
The Meyerowitz stories,
which I was like, all right, it's got
it
a cast
fine.
I like, and I didn't enjoy it.
I didn't expect it to be like. I didn't think it was gonna be. I was like, pleasant.
I just that was I saw it recently. I thought it was the funniest thing I saw. Private Life.
Okay.
There are a couple trying to have a. It's a dark
a
though.
Kid.
There are a couple trying to have a kid. There's a really funny Thanksgiving scene. They go over. Molly Shannon's in it with John Carroll Lynch. So there's funny, but like, and I'm watching it too, and I'm thinking like I haven't watched Billions in a while, but I'm like, this is the Paul Giamatti I like, not the like power hungry Giamatti. I like the funny. Like, kind of like, can't get his shit together, Paul Giamatti. Like, this is Giamatti for my generation.
You know, he's the son of the...
Bart Giamatti.
That was great. When I read that, I was like, get out of town.
Yeah, it's great. It'd be like...
Isn't that weird? Because you look so old
it's
already.
Crazy.
You're like, oh, I didn't think of you as having, like, a dead old dad.
Uh-huh.
But you are, because you're so, like, scraggly
was
looking.
Dad?
Bart Giamatti. He was the old commissioner of baseball when we were kids.
Right before Faye Vincent.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Oh. That's a little fun fact. I think I'm going to say the movie I hated the most this year, and I think everyone's a little too critical.
A Star Is Born.
This is how I get. And I text you that I'm like, I think everyone's too critical. Everyone just needs to relax. Nerds ruin everything. And then I see something I don't like. I'm like, let's fucking riot. This is shit.
Yeah.
So I saw this movie, Assassination Nation, and I fucking thought it was a pile of shit. I hated the way it was shot. I hated I was so messy. I didn't like it. And then at the end, it was like a film by Sam Levinson. And I go, I didn't connect it.
Barry Levinson.
And then all of a sudden I go, oh, your fucking dad is a fucking one of like the best filmmakers, like whatever. And so you just get to fucking make your movie. That's like getting annoyed at nepotism.
But who was in that?
Who's
it's on
in
cable
it?
Now.
Yeah. So I saw it.
Oh, okay.
Sookie Waterhouse. Oh, Joel McHale's in it.
Sookie.
Just like it's a fucking mess.
Wow.
And, they had some interesting things. Like, it was like everyone's information gets released, which I think is interesting to do something with that. Like, all our information, all the chat logs, everything. So, like, the principal's in trouble. And it's like, and then it just kind of goes to, it's just, I don't know. It's just not fucking good. And it's not coherent. It's not good. And then that annoyed me when I saw that he has a really famous dad. And I'm like, oh, here you go. Make your movie. Son, make your movie.
Did either of you see Rampage?
I drove a half an hour to Fort Wayne to see Rampage.
I watched it on HBO
because
it was not something I was going to see. But I remember I watched it. I was like, I kind of like. I like thought, hey, I'm glad I didn't pay for this, but I did. I'm gonna give it a thumb up.
That's fine,
right?
You're allowed to like things. It doesn't have to be the greatest thing.
No, but I thought it was gonna be like I thought it might be bad, and then I was like, what I liked is in like the first 25 minutes, like a sort of major actor just gets fucking murdered with his team, and I was like, oh, that's always a good move, even if you have like kind of a weak story. If you have kind of a weak, like, if you kill off somebody that you think that the crowd thinks is important, it just raises it a little because it's like, oh, well, you've already made like one choice that was maybe less conventional.
When The Rock and right. Sam Jackson died in...
Hilarious, the
but
other
you
guys.
Knew, but you knew they weren't going to be a major part.
But that was really funny how they did it.
Yeah, they jumped off the building. Yeah, they were going to do that with... You know that's what they were going to do with Lost, right? The original thing of Lost is Michael Keaton was going to play the role of Jack, and they were going to kill him off right away. That was... And then it changed, obviously. They got attached to Matthew Fox. But that was going to be the thing. Get you to... The show, Michael Keaton, he's back on TV, Lost, and then he dies like in the middle of the first episode.
Huh.
So that's that would have been up your alley.
I'm looking forward to the Tim Burton Dumbo. I think it's going to be very
looks
good.
Looks creepy.
It does look creepy.
I think it's going to be great.
I mean, haven't seen any of those.
And Colin Farrell definitely is his new Johnny Depp. Like it's like, can I get a younger, not methed out, crazy version of Johnny Depp, like who used to be my guy, who used to be my guy for decades.
Is he work again, Johnny Depp? Does anyone care about that?
I don't think
it's weird where the line is sometimes. I don't think right. Kevin Spacey out.
Can I say? And I know the Terry Crews thing was one of these cases where it was like somebody like you can't question how somebody responds to this. But when I read the guy saying Kevin Spacey like fondled my genitals for 3 minutes at the bar,
and he's 17.
I was like, 3 minutes is a long fucking time. Like,
yeah.
I'm not saying you can't freeze up,
yeah.
But I'm like, seven, that's a...
And he called his girlfriend. That's weird. That was weird.
3 minutes is so long. When I read that, I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm not saying he couldn't have frozen up or had some trauma in the past. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it did strike me as like, 3 minutes. Just, what were you just like...
Well, like it's Kevin Spacey.
Like, a Family Guy episode would be that happening. And they would hold it for the 3 minutes
yeah.
while like Meg is standing there or the kid, the who's
Chris.
The son? Chris. Ah, and like Kevin Spacey's just like, all right. And I could see them holding it mm-hmm. for 3 minutes.
Well, like you're old enough to say, dude, what are you doing?
And that's not to say, like, because Terry Crews, I believe him.
Yeah.
Why, like, literally, why would he, like, why talk about lie? Not having a like, talk about making no sense to make that up, but I don't think he made a claim of like 3 minutes and is like if somebody inadvertently brushed up against my day, I'd be like, ugh.
Yeah, like, oh,
but hey, now you can't, I'm not, you can't say how everybody else would respond, but
no,
Cookie.
No, Cookie.
Sorry.
Cookie. No. No. No means no. Come here. Okay, we could wrap it up.
I think that's about it.
Yeah, plug some stuff. Plug some stuff, Jeff. What do you got cool. coming up? When's your doc coming out?
I got two things coming out. Yeah, there's one doc called Tasteless, which is about an old joke book, and it kind of gets into kind of the stuff we were talking about with comedy now and kind of being held accountable, but also like we shouldn't, you know, just say anything to just say it. You should have a fucking point. That's going to come out. It's playing in another festival in Illinois in later on in the month, and then kind of hopefully a few more festivals, and then it'll be out middle of the year.
Cool.
And then I got another short called Hail Mary on religion and sports.
Oh, wow.
That's like a fun little 10-minute thing where I talk to a few like sports people and a priest about...
Can you send me the link to some
yeah.
of these?
Yeah. I can send you a link to both.
Yeah,
and
do that,
that'll be out at some point later this year. It's done. I just like I got to put it out.
We have to do a regular sit-down.
The mundane.
We have to do a regular sit-down origin story with you. It's long overdue. But, JL.
Hi, guys.
This will go up Saturday, Sunday.
Oh, well, if this goes up Sunday and you're in Albany and you listen to the Mundane Festival immediately, I am at your club tonight.
Albany people, go.
So that's Albany the 4th through the 6th. Then I'm at the DC Comedy Loft January 11th and 12th. And then I am at Helium in Buffalo, New York, the 24th through the 26th of January. And I guess just simple plug is I have a great, funny weekly podcast as Donald Trump called Making Podcasts Great Again. So give that a listen and or subscribe and just check out jlcomedy.com for any other shit.
Great. Thanks so much, guys, for doing this. I appreciate you. Take it easy, everybody.